Dean Gillespie spent 20 years behind bars for crimes he didn't commit. He was exonerated with the help of the Ohio Innocence Project, and he won a lawsuit against the police department and detective who investigated him. Will he ever get the money he was awarded? You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about this case and why the township at the center hasn't paid up are Dean Gillespie, who is a board member of the Ohio Innocence Project and After Innocence. Thanks so much for being here, Dean.
Glad to be here.
And Cincinnati Inquirer reporter Laura Bischoff. Welcome back, Laura.
Hey, Lucy. Thanks for having me.
Dean, for people who aren't familiar with your case, can you just tell us briefly what happened to you? How did you end up incarcerated for 20 years for this crime that you've since been exonerated for?
Well, I was brung to the attention by a disgruntled boss of mine from General Motors, didn't like me, and kept taking my information to the police department trying to get rid of me. I was working for General Motors, a union job. You just can't fire somebody. So we proved in federal court that he had been trying to get me, getting rid of me, and that's how it started 35 years ago.
35 years ago.
A vendetta, dislike.
Mm. And you were locked up, like I said, for these crimes that you didn't commit. We were talking about this a little bit before the show. You've said you lost out on some very important years of your life in prison. Can you talk about that and tell us about the art you made there and continue to make to kind of see yourself through that?
So February 12th of 1991, I was sentenced to 22 to 56 years. Sent to a close maximum security prison. 70% of those people are not going home. They do not care about you or human life or anything else because they're done. Very violent place to be. And, I come from, everybody says I came from Mayberry. You know, to go into this big lion's den was a hard, hard transition to make. And, I was trying to figure out, how I was going to get out of this the spot I was in there, just fighting all the time because, someone would call me a rapist and that would just drive me crazy because, I didn't commit these crimes.
Yeah.
And I had to figure out how I was going to take myself out of that mindset and into something a little bit more peaceful. And that's when I just started fooling around with some artwork and I'm in there doing artwork, building things out of trash, little buildings, little scenes in time. My art was based on my things in my head of driving down Route 66 and seeing these little weird style buildings. And like I say, everything was found objects just to kill time, just to pass the day, give me things to do and think about other than just the violence. And started doing the art, and that was what I'd done to keep my sanity for years. And I would do a piece, and the policy was after, and you got to understand, this was not allowed when I started doing it, and I had a lot of pushback from the institution and had to start a program and get, it's a whole years of process to even be allowed to do what I was doing. And so we had a policy of when a project got done, I'd send it out and my family would pick it up. And that's what I was doing every day for years. So mentally, I was out of that prison during the time the doors were locked and in the cell and listening to music, lots of music and doing this art and come home and it somebody seen it and thought it was something.
Well, I think it's something. I've seen pictures of it. So it kind of transported you someplace else when you were just listening to music and trying to make this art of things you were kind of envisioning from Route 66?
Yeah. And it was, the guards could come by and count me 7, 8, 10 times. I wouldn't have a clue. I was always like a miniature construction guy on a job site. And I was in this art when I was doing it, literally inside of that building doing it. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you worked with the Ohio Innocence Project on your case. Tell us about that work, that collaboration.
Well, I, you know, I fought for years. First 10 years, you know, my parents was paying crappy lawyers for years to fight this case. There was no Innocence Project in Ohio at the time. And there was an article in the paper that a guy by the name of Bill Gallagher was trying to, you know, get some attention on bringing an Innocence Project to the Cincinnati area. And he started doing some, you know, some networking and things. And somehow Mark Godsey and John Cranley got involved. And the next thing you know, we have an Innocence Project in Ohio. And I was the first case they took. And I was the 14th person released from 43 we have released so far at this time.
You ended up filing a civil lawsuit in your case. Explain why that step was important for you.
Well, my life was stolen from me. You know, I turned 25 years old in the county jail, and I came out at 45 years old. The best years of your life, you know, when you're establishing who you are, what kind of career you're going to have. You're having a family. You're buying your homes. You're doing all these things to set yourself up for retirement. So you come out at 45 years old in one of the most violent places in America, you know, a close maximum security prison, into a world that has computers and cell phones and all these things that didn't exist when I first got locked up. It was a hard, hard transition, and it was a hard transition.
Laura Dean won that civil lawsuit and a sizable judgment. Walk us through the outcome of that case and the amount of that judgment.
So the judgment is $45 million from the township and the police department. And the township was ordered to, indemnify the officer who was responsible for this, Matthew Scott Moore, a former detective. And the township is just saying, well, we just can't afford it. It's more than we're going to be able to pay. And, you know, this was a jury decision back in 2022. So the township has been accruing interest on that unpaid settlement. And it's a pretty good chunk of money every year that's added to the 22 or to the 45 million. You know, I think the point of these big, huge judgments is to kind of be a deterrent for bad policing and bad, you know, prosecutorial misconduct and other problems in these kind of cases.
Laura, you mentioned $45 million. How does that compare to other judgments in similar cases?
Well, it's the biggest one in Ohio history, and I think it's up in the top 10 nationally. I'm not entirely sure about that. Dean might have a better idea.
It's average. There was just two guys in Chicago did $112 million. There's a lady in Vegas who did $37 million for like 8 years. It's the average nationally. Mm-hmm. Nationally, it's an average settlement.
You're tuned
or verdict.
You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. We're continuing our conversation about a man who was locked up for 20 years. He won a $45 million judgment after being exonerated. We're talking about why the township who owes him that money hasn't paid up. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Dean, you talked about how the money, you know, it sounds like a big number for a lot of us, but it's average, you think, in a lot of these cases. What kind of message did you feel like that judgment sent when you got that verdict?
Well, when the verdict came, you know, I kept telling my lawyers that I wouldn't take $100 million for what happened to me, and I still wouldn't today.
If somebody said, "Oh, you can get locked up for 20 years for $100 million," that's what you mean. You wouldn't take that deal.
Well, you say 20 years, but when I went to prison, it was 22 to 56. Mm. So here's no idea when I was coming out. You know, I was very fortunate to come out at 20. But the the amount of money is irrelevant to the damage that has happened. You know, the PTSD and the mental trauma that I've had is, you know, comparable to things, you know, the stuff that you see in a prison. It sounds like a lot of money, but the lawyers didn't do it for free. So, you know, they're getting a very large cut of this. And when it comes down to it, you know, I'm looking after dealing with this for 35 years, I'm looking at less than $1 million a year. And I don't know anybody on this earth that would sign up to go to prison not knowing when they're getting out for $1 million a year. It's you know, I lost my youth, and there's no money can bring that back. There's no money. When the verdict came down, it was, okay, this is how you get their attention. You know, these folks have immunity. These prosecutors have immunity, and they can do whatever they want to do. And they don't start paying attention until this affects their pocketbook. And I think that's one of the most important parts of these civil suits against these towns and prosecutors and cities and everything, is that you've done someone wrong. This is what it costs when you do someone wrong. I don't know any exoneree, and I talk to hundreds of them, who would go to prison for the amount of money that they got as a settlement. And I'm very fortunate to have a settlement. A lot of folks don't even get to this point to be able to get any civil money from what happened to them. I'm very fortunate to be where I'm at, and that's the large sum of money that these lawyers got because they knew what they were doing and understood the gravity of what had happened. I'm very thankful for the jurors to have listened and heard, you know, the damage and the trauma that it had to me and my family. You know, I missed a lot of things in life, And one of the things that I want to talk about too about this is, as an exoneree, when you go to prison, most of us were working jobs. We had jobs of whatever it is. You're paying into Social Security. I spent 20 years in prison not paying into Social Security. You can't draw Social Security if you don't pay in. So the folks who don't get compensated have to work till they're dead because they are ineligible for Social Security.
No safety net there.
Nothing. Nothing. And that's just appalling the way that is also blended into this. The other loss that you have is even after all this time you've done wrongfully, you didn't get compensated, and you're not going to collect to be able to, you know, not work when you're 90 years old.
We do have a caller on the line. Hey, Den, thanks for calling. What's your question?
How did the gentleman who went to prison, how did his boss get him convicted of a crime?
Yeah, I'm going to put you on hold. Your audio is a little rough there. I think the question is, you mentioned this was a vendetta from your former boss. How did that translate into this conviction?
He was an ex-police officer at this police department, and he would go down to his buddy and say, hey, check this guy out for this, check this guy out for that, until it stuck. You know, what had happened was these were kidnapping, rape, and armed robbery. The case was over two years old, and he had went down and asked, you know, to check me out, have me checked out for this crime. And you know, this is all stuff that I learned after the fact,
right,
after the Innocence Project came on, that he had been there four times before doing this. But one of them, he went in, and the detectives who were the original detectives looked at my driver's license and seen I didn't fit the description. You know, I didn't fit the height, the weight, nothing matched up. So they disregarded it, you know, and said, yeah, this guy doesn't even look close. But then what had happened was, my boss's best friend, who was the chief of the police department, his son became the detective. This kid grew up around him. So he goes down there and says this stuff, and bam, here we go.
And didn't the jury find that the lineup was inappropriate? Oh. The picture they had of you was like a different finish. It was bigger. It was a different, bigger perspective. I mean, there were all kinds of, they didn't give your lawyers at the time evidence that, that you were not even in town when these crimes were committed.
Correct. Yeah. They had a note on, I guess they knew the guy's pant size. I couldn't fit into pants in the seventh grade. Mm. That type of stuff that we didn't know. We didn't have no clue that this stuff was even existed. It wasn't turned over. You know, there's all kind of things that go with that. But it just, you know, once the familiarity with the family in the police department there and everything, it just went, you know, the victims, my lawyer went down a list of 27 things, the differences between me and the person who committed a crime. Did the person who attacked you have gray in his hair? No, he did not. I've had gray in my hair since high school. Did the person who attacked you have severe acne scars on both sides of his jawline? Yes, he did. Obviously, Mr. Gillespie doesn't. Did the person who attacked you have a dark suntan? Yes, he did. Very dark. I'm pasty white. This goes on. Did the person who attacked you have a hairy chest? No, he did not. I'm covered in hair. Why are we here? Yeah. Why are we sitting here right now? But what I've learned is if someone gets up there and says Mickey Mouse raped him, Mickey Mouse is going to prison. It doesn't matter. It's that eyewitness testimony. It doesn't matter. They've just explained nothing fits, but that's the guy. Mm. You know, that, and that was just, you know, an eye-opening experience there that how can I not fit the description, but this case continues on and on and on and on and on up to conviction.
Yeah. Thanks for that call, Den. We appreciate it. Laura, did you want to weigh in?
Yeah, I was just going to say that that you know the identification by the witnesses, by the victims in this happened like 2.5 years after the crime, and one of the attacks was on twin sisters, and they were told the one twin number one comes in, makes this ID on this photo lineup where Dean's photo is on yellow background, everybody else is on gray, his face is much bigger. And she initially said, well, I'm not really sure. It kind of looks like this guy. And the officers said, you have to be 100%. So then she's like, okay, fine. I'm 100%. Then they said, don't talk to your sister about this, but have her call the department. And so the next day the twins show up together for twin number two to make the identification. Mm. It's just like, you know, it's like one problem compounded on top of another. And it, you know, this story is really extraordinary because it shows how much it takes, how much resources it takes to undo this kind of injustice. I mean, his mom was fighting for Dean from the get-go. He maintained his innocence from the get-go. We had to establish an Ohio Innocence Project in Ohio. The former Attorney General Jim Petro got involved in the case as a pro bono attorney. I wrote about Dean, 16, 18 years ago, and when he was going up for parole. So it required the power of the press. The Petros, Jim and Nancy Petro, ended up writing an entire book where half of it was about Dean's case.
We are going to continue this conversation after a short break, and later in the program, we'll discuss the needs of inner city seniors and whether they're being met. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about a man who was exonerated after spending 20 years behind bars and whether an Ohio township is going to pay the $45 million judgment he won. My guests are Dean Gillespie, a board member of the Ohio Innocence Project and After Innocence, and Cincinnati Enquirer reporter Laura Bischoff. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Dean, we've been talking about this judgment amount, this $45 million. Have you gotten any of that money?
No, I haven't got a dime of it yet, no.
And Laura, Miami Township, which is in Montgomery County, it's on the hook for that judgment. Tell us a little bit more about why the township hasn't paid Dean any of that.
Well, to start, $45 million exceeds their annual budget, and they're saying that, you know, the tax revenues that they have are earmarked for specific purposes, and that paying out this settlement would result in financial ruin for the township, and that they may even have to declare bankruptcy. The Ohio Township Association said that no township has ever declared bankruptcy, and it would require special approval by the Ohio Tax Commissioner. Other options would be to cut some sort of a payment plan, work out a payment plan, or issue bonds to pay for it, issue a special, new tax, or what have you. So, they're trying to say none of this is possible. And that they want to try to either negotiate down, to a smaller amount, or try to say that they don't have to pay it at all.
I want to note here that we did invite officials from Miami Township to be part of this discussion. We did not get a response from them. Dean, that idea of a lower amount, we were talking before the show, they had an opportunity to negotiate a lower amount.
Right? We had several offers in front of them that they don't understand what they've done. They really don't understand what's happened and what really has been done to me. They don't have a clue.
So before this went to trial, your lawyers said, hey, what about, they put several offers in front of them and they just said, no, no, no.
Right.
Laura, doesn't the township have insurance for stuff like this?
Well, I think that their insurance policy, the insurance policy that was in place at the time, that insurer, I think, went out of business.
Okay, so Dean, the township is saying it can't afford to pay you this money, that this judgment could bankrupt the government. What do you think of that? How do you respond to that?
I couldn't afford to lose my life. I lost 20 years of my life. I don't have nothing to go from 24 to 45. What else can I say but boo-hoo? I lost my life. You're just talking about money. If you can teleport me back to 25 years old, we can probably work something out, but that's not how the world works. that's on them now.
Yeah.
The jurors, rest the verdict in a very quick, fashion. And, it's been upheld a dozen times.
Laura, what options does the township have? I mean, are they still fighting this in court somehow?
Dean might be able to better answer exactly where it is in court. I think that they are trying to appeal it, I think, at a broader level. They had a three-judge panel at the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeal sided with Dean and said no, lower amount isn't allowed. And then I think now they're going to try and see if they can get the full Sixth Circuit to weigh in on it. It did. Okay. So, yeah.
Go ahead. And also, say that again, Dean. I think your microphone was off when you said that. That got denied. You said?
Yeah. Their request for that got denied just a week ago. So they have the United States Supreme Court to go to next. If they want to try that, this appeal has went on for 2.5 years. So they're spending a lot of money on interest because it's a federal verdict and there's interest accrued on that. So, they're just being extremely wasteful of taxpayer money right now.
Laura, have you heard anything more from the township officials?
No, I didn't get a hold of the Miami Township, but I talked mostly with the Ohio Township Association about whether or not this would be, out of the ordinary. Would it be historic to have to file for bankruptcy? If they lose at the U.S. Supreme Court, maybe they'll ask the Ohio Tax Commissioner to let them go into bankruptcy.
And you can talk about their chief financial officer if you'd like to, Laura.
Oh yeah, the Dayton Daily News was reporting that there was some sort of financial shenanigans with how much was it, Dean? Like
$9.7 million
that he was going to invest in kind of questionable instruments. Like, was it coins and
yeah,
and I think the state auditor did an investigation on that. So I mean, Dean's point is that's an example where the township apparently has got, you know, $9 million sitting around that they could maybe put toward this settlement. Mm.
We have another caller on the line. Hi, Kathy. Thanks for calling. What's your question or comment?
Just that, how is it fair at all that the township just can say, oh, sorry, I don't have the money, or we can't declare bankruptcy? If this was a person, they would garnish their wages, take every tax return they received until that was paid. But because it's a township, they just have to say, sorry, we don't have it. Like, I just don't understand how there's no legal precedent over that. Thank you.
Thanks for that call and for that comment. Dean, I want to ask you this. You know, $45 million is more money than most of us can imagine having, although you said you certainly wouldn't get all that. The lawyers didn't do this for free. But 20 years is also way more time than most of us can imagine surviving behind bars. If you get that money or a chunk of that money, what are your plans? What do you want to be able to do with that?
Well, you said it, the key word is surviving. Just surviving the 20 years in the horrendous conditions in an American prison. It's, you know, I'm trying to, you know, pay the bills that caught up with everybody with, trying to help, you know, before, and try to, you know, build a little life. You know, I'm 60 years old, you know, I'm 60. How much more time do I have to even do anything? So, you know, when I get the money, I got to be in full run to just get settled down into a normal life that I can, you know, go buy groceries and stuff. You know, people hear $45 million and they think, oh, my God, I lost half of my 20s, every single bit of my 30s, half of my 40s. And since I've been home, this has been every day since December 22nd, 2011, when I came home. This has been every single day. And the last few weeks since their appeal got denied, it has been maddening of, you know, people thinking it's so much money. It's a huge amount of money. What is some person's life worth? You know, we've got kids that we've gotten out of prison with the Ohio Innocence Project that went in at 15 and 16 years old, spent 30 plus years in prison, and they're not going to get a nickel. How in the world? I've got a friend who spent 29 years on death row and is pittance. He's getting a pittance of the money. So these things have to happen for people to pay attention to what is happening, because most people could care less about someone in prison until it's them or someone they know or love. And they want to know, why is the system so messed up? Because you didn't care before until you're in it. So these things have to happen to make this go away or make it better or make it manageable. And $45 million is not enough money. I can assure you it's not enough money for the damage that's happened to me in my life through this.
Well, I've been talking with Dean Gillespie, a board member of the Ohio Innocence Project and After Innocence, and Cincinnati Inquirer reporter Laura Bischoff. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Lucy.
Up next, we'll talk about the needs of older adults in the inner city and whether they're being met. This is Cincinnati Edition.